Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. As I mentioned, we had to slide some things, rearrange some things, but we're trying to still get back to some of the regular stuff that we do. And one of the things is the economy, just trying to get a little update. And, you know we can't cover everything. A lot's going on, but to help us kind of navigate what we can, we have Mr. Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore on this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Gretchen. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I cannot complain. Just enjoying the date and time that we are in. There's so much going on in our economic world and landscape. It's just a lot of data overload at this moment, but I cannot complain otherwise.
Yeah, because you said enjoying. I'm not sure how much some people are enjoying what's going on, but I think they, if they had a little more insight, you know, a little more clarification, it might be helpful. So, goodness gracious, where do we begin? Do we begin with
what happened with the jobs report?
Do we begin with gas? What are we talking about?
So let's jump in first off, and we'll speak to a little bit of the volatility that we've seen a lot of the last couple of days. And then we'll jump into our jobs report and provide some data surrounding that. But, you know, recently, and the reason why I say I kind of enjoy this time, because it proves that our firm does is prudent and that it's coming true. We've seen some significant, I should say, volatility over the last few days and as well as today in trading. We're starting to see a secular rotation from growth stocks to value stocks that are really, you know, taking the lead right now in our economy. And this is starting to really replay out or play out the reopening trade that everyone has been talking about over the last, you know, 3 to 6 months or so. So this is a good thing. And the reason why I say it's good is because previously, before that, our stock market traded against the economic market. They were not trading in tandem. And sometimes you have those dislocations that take place, and it causes a false sense of security in the market. Where we are right now is we're starting to transition back to seeing the stock market and the economic market correlate in a positive way, and they're starting to trade together in a positive way. So that's the exciting part for me. Whenever we see economic data that is released, then it's played out in the stock market like it's supposed to. That is a very, very positive thing. Unfortunately, and I should say, I guess, unfortunately with the caveat, our jobs number was released this past Friday, and it was not as exciting as everyone anticipated it would be. There was a gain of 267,000 jobs added to our economy, which was much less than was the 1 million jobs that was expected to be added to the economy. So this created some initial volatility in the market, although the market did in positive on this trading session on Friday. But it shows that we are potentially getting to a point where, in a conversation that's been out there for some time now, but we're getting to that point where there is a decision being made between the individuals as to whether they're going to return to work armor. They're going to continue to collect those unemployment benefits that are essentially paying a lot of people more than they would if they were to return to some of the jobs that are really looking for people, such as in the service industry. The second part of that is, or that we can see from this employment report, is that there's possibly a structural shift in our employment landscape, which means that many of the people that, and this is something that we feared back in October and November of last year, many of the people that were unemployed, roughly anywhere between 8 to 10 million people that were of that total number that were unemployed, may be structurally unemployed, meaning that their skills no longer meet the demand of what the labor market is asking for at the time. So we're seeing an extension in the long-term unemployed. Those are individuals that have been unemployed for 26 weeks or longer. And that's leading, you know, the data and leading us to believe that there is a structural shift in our employment landscape, which for on the surface, we can see some of that as we have entered into a new environment, I should say. There is a greater demand for companies and individuals and employees to work from home or have a more comfortable work-life balance as it was introduced to us by the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're seeing a transition away from a lot of brick and mortar, transition away from a lot of the other retail office outlets to more of the work at home. And when you see that transition, then there's a change in the supply of jobs that are produced out there. So we're at a point right now in our economy where we're expecting to see, you know, hopefully a revision of this number, job support, going forth in June and July, and hopefully, you know, the May numbers that will be produced in June and the June numbers that will be produced in July will paint a better picture and show that there are more people returning to work. But as of right now, we just are seeing that people are preferring to stay home, and this may not be the case for everyone, but it seems like it is becoming the case in many areas. And something that many states, or I should say a handful of states in the Southeast, are doing to combat that is they're ending the federal employment assurance that is being offered to their citizens. So I know the state of Arkansas joined Mississippi, South Carolina, and I believe it was Georgia, in ending those additional federal benefits that they would be paying out at the end of June, as opposed to having those unemployment benefits extend through September. This is potentially going to cause a shock for many people, or it may potentially cause many people to say, okay, now it's time to go back to work or find a job or potentially even accept a job where they're going to be underemployed, making money that is less than what they are currently making now and doing a job that they're currently not satisfied with. Again, that plays back into the mindset of a structural change in our employment landscape. So I know it's a lot that's going on. It wasn't a very exciting job number or job data that was released, but unfortunately, that's currently where we stand right now in our economy.
Okay, and the thing that is I guess, really disturbing to me as well is that this apparently, and I hate to say this, it seems like as usual, affects African Americans more than anybody else. The unemployment rate, from what I've seen recently, is higher among African Americans. Also, there was a report out recently in the Orlando area that this particular market is one of the worst when it comes to minority pay for jobs. And then you also have the lack of wealth in terms of African Americans in the housing market. So, I mean, it just seems to be an awful situation, as far as I'm concerned, for African Americans. How do you get past this? I mean, what's the first, I guess, everything's not going to happen overnight, but what kind of guidance do you have in terms of maybe some of the first steps that African-Americans need to take in order to, climb out of that deficit maybe it's not all together at one time, at least start making steps. What do you suggest?
It's a very hard thing, and it's a very, very difficult thing to rectify. And it's going to be hard to really rectify this without the investment from many partners. And those partners, it's going to be corporate America, and those partners are going to be Congress, to really make sure that things are true and equitable across all landscapes. If you look at the difference in the unemployment rates, and this is just for, working age individuals, male and female, 16 years and older. In the first quarter of 2020, before the pandemic hit, the unemployment rate for African Americans was 6.6% versus today at roughly just at 10%. All right. Now, when you compare that 0.6% as it stands right now, it's 5.9%. So it's nearly, half the unemployment rate of African Americans. And unfortunately, the same is, it's kind of true for Asian America and Latino America. Their unemployment rates are significantly lower than that of African American unemployment rate. So there is going to be, I foresee that there would need to be a significant amount of buy-in from corporations to understand how they are doing their hiring practices and if there is inequity in those hiring practices, as well as Congress, any congressional help that can help with that, providing some true equity when it comes to hiring corporate America. And that really, bleeds up the corporate ladder as well. We see a very, very underrepresented amount of African Americans in the C-suite level of jobs. And we understand that when you have African Americans that are in those, executive positions, are unable to make those executive hires and decisions, and breathes down into the rest of the organization, whether it's a private company or publicly traded company. So there's a lot that needs to be done from all angles in order to help combat the situation that we, like you mentioned, we have it every time, and we have it all the time. The African-American unemployment rate always lagging higher than every other race in this country.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, but the other thing that I want to find out is, what can African Americans do that doesn't require relying on someone else? Okay, because it seems that, like you're saying, corporations and yes, people, other facets of society kind of need to get involved in this to make sure that there's, a more equitable situation for everyone. But, we know that there are some entities that are not going to do it without some incentive for themselves, like what's in it for me. And they, not necessarily because it's for the good of society as a whole, but what's in it for them. And a lot of these entities are very short-sighted when it comes to that. So, in the past, African Americans have been in dire situations from slavery, from segregation on through now, where they've had to kind of rely on themselves, rely on their own communities. It was tough, but some people actually did it. How can African Americans, be a little bit more self-sufficient in terms of securing their success?
Well, the only way you can really secure your own success is really to have education. From the basic standpoint, education is something that no one can take from you. But a lot of times if there is just a you're disenfranchised. It's hard to, you can have education, but if you don't have opportunity, I think you'll still miss out. So there's things that we can do individually, that we all can do individually to try to right the ship and better our own situation. But to a certain degree, if you're not given the opportunity, it's not much you can do about it. So education, having that education, taking a standpoint of really not only investing in yourself through education, but investing financially, being able to invest or, you know, save money for the next generation and properly plan with insurance and things of that nature. That's what starts that snowball of economic wealth growing in any family and any lineage. And it continues to grow when those principles are taught and received by the next generation that they're grown upon. So it's not something that's easily done. And it's something that could take, you know, one or two generations before it's truly realized and before we're really seeing difference in the data. But it's unfortunately it's not an easy answer for that.
And speaking of education, I want to get to some, I have a question about that when we come back, but we're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton, Jr. of Warwickshire. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arglitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire Advisors talking about some economic issues. And so one of the questions that I have is we're having a hard time with either places being able to hire people right now or people with a certain skill set or certain skill sets being able to find the jobs that they want right now. So I guess one of my questions is, you talk about being prepared by having the proper education, but education is more and more costly. And we are finding a lot of graduates. We're going to have a new batch already with nowhere to go. So how valuable is, I guess you could say, traditional education, and what can we look at in terms of our educational system to prepare our students to come out and be, I guess, more, I would say, versatile when it comes to trying to find employment?
So that's a very, very good question, and that comes to pretty much matching the supply of labor for the demand of labor. Now, one thing that I know that Seminole State College does here locally is they reach out to local business owners and they poll on an annual basis the qualities, the skill sets, the leadership, you know, skills, the intangibles, intangibles that are needed from business owners like myself from their employees going forward. And they take that data and they try to reproduce that in the students that they have in their school. I think there's going to need to be a large buy-in you know, in that same respect from all the major universities around UCF, Rollins College, and all the other, you know, higher learning institutions to be able to provide that supply of capital or human capital, I should say, that's needed to fill the demand of jobs out there. We are in a changing climate. We are in a changing world. Jobs that are in high demand right now, many of the tech jobs, many of the programming jobs and things of that nature are in demand, and they have openings, and these are well-paying jobs that have salaries and benefits to them. Those jobs are out there, and they're available. So it's a matter of being able to, at the higher level, higher educational level, being able to supply those jobs to this market, and then at the same time, having those institutions reach down into the primary education and offer internships and say these are the things, skills, that and talent that today's economy is looking for. So while you're in, you know, middle school or while you're transitioning to high school and becoming a sophomore, junior, senior in high school, how can we, you know, introduce you to these skill sets to prepare you for these things going forward? And I know that there's, you know, different school districts across the country in Texas and in Chicago and different places that do have companies, engineering firms, you know, or different financial firms that will sponsor particular high schools and give back to that high school with that knowledge, with that education and experience. That's something that I noticed that is not available, unfortunately, in our local area. We don't have that, at least not, if it is available, it's not, you know, widely advertised that we have any corporate sponsors or any corporate partnership with the educational institutions in our area that provide that leadership to advise as to what soft, tangible, and intangible skills are needed to meet that supply and demand gap that we currently have right now.
One of the things I also wanted to ask about is about on-the-job training. And, I mean, the part-time job that I'm working right now has some really intense on-the-job training. But I don't hear about a lot of that being offered, because to me that would kind of, I guess, make up the difference a little bit in terms of people being able to get jobs, because you know, there would be significant on-the-job training and not necessarily relying so much on past work experience or you know, college education. How do we encourage our corporations to do more of that, you know, helping them pull people up out of bootstraps? Because also one of the things I think is good about on-the-job training is that you mold that person to be better suited to serve your needs, and not they don't necessarily come with all the baggage of previous job experience.
That is very true, and it's very interesting that you mentioned that. My father, when he retired from the military, he actually taught business entrepreneurship at OJT at Edgewater High School. And part of that, him teaching that course was, you know, the students would leave early. Some students would leave early during the day, and they would go work at various organizations around the city. And he would have to go visit them at their job, see what they're doing, get signed off from their boss and things of that nature. But it did give you those practical intangibles that everyone needs when they're going to a job. One, learning a particular skill of that job, whether it's in the healthcare industry or whether it's in the working at a law firm or in the financial office, learning those particular skills. Two, learning professional decorum as a high schooler. And many times, individuals are passed over for jobs because they do not truly know how to conduct themselves, you know, for lack of better terms. They do not know those intangibles of tying a tie and being able, you know, the punctuality that comes along with all those things in that nature. So that is something that is missing in our society right now. And I think that is I think that's one of the things that potentially has become extinct as a result of the Great Recession that we realized back in the mid-2000s. And unfortunately, now with the most recent pandemic, it's kind of shuttered all those doors for such opportunities as that. It would be nice for us to get back to that standpoint. It would be nice, and it possibly would have to be fundamentally working through maybe local chamber of commerce or something like that to be the liaison to provide that instrumental introduction, again, between corporation and educational institution. But I believe that is a vital, vital skill that is needed. Not everyone is cut out for college. Not everyone is designed to go to college, and not everyone that goes to college and gets that four-year degree or gets a master's degree ends up being full or employable person or the talent that the corporations are looking for. So on both sides of the spectrum, whether you go to college, whether you don't go to college, that OJT, that on-the-job training, especially at an early age, is something that is very vital and very crucial.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the people coming out of college. Seniors are having a hard time as well, though. And then they come with a plethora of experience, you know, not just job experience, but life experience. But, you know, it seems like I see a little bit more age discrimination going on with regards to, you know, our older workforce. Are these the people that should, and, you know, retirement at, what, 60, 62, whatever, 65, is not necessarily beneficial. In fact, if I'm correct, there's a lot of encouragement to get people to retire at 70 in order to maximize their benefits. So how can seniors, I guess, make themselves more relevant, you know, in terms of trying to get a job? Or is this a time where they should consider maybe consulting or maybe pursuing hobbies in terms of a new career? What do you suggest? What do you think?
I've seen that significantly through this pandemic is the ageism, but it's technically not, you know, if you ask any corporate partner in HR department, they won't say that it's ageism, but I've known people personally that have been with their corporate jobs for 20 plus years, 30 years, and get the phone call in the midst of the pandemic because they are heavy salaries that they were being phased out. And these are individuals that are sometimes being phased out, and, you know, they're still in their 50s, early 50s, so they're nowhere near retirement age. They still have plenty of runway left of talent, skill, and brain power that they can provide. But, you know, they're being shifted along because there's a new breed of, you know, 21, 22-year-old talent that's coming along that they can, you know, save money on by paying them a lower salary and squeeze more out of them. My advice and my thoughts around that and what I have seen individuals do is really lean on consulting. I've seen a handful of individuals that I know start a consulting firm providing consulting and consultation for those things that they, you know, were doing from their regular 9-to-5. I've seen them go into education, look at becoming an adjunct professor because they do have that work experience. Many higher learning institutions realize that it's not just, you know, those book smarts, you know, hiring a PhD to teach a class is always going to be the best thing. Now, they're going to pay those PhDs the most, but if they can bring an executive, you know, from a company or someone that has years of experience and can speak to the ebbs and flows of the business cycle regarding that particular industry, universities and higher learning institutions are all for that. So that's another area that I see, you know, many individuals going into outside of consulting. It's just that into the education arena. We are at a changing point right now. The age for retirement is creeping up every year. I remember when the the R&D requirement was 70.5, and then it moved up to 72, which it currently is now, and then there's legislation in place for that to move to 75. So things are moving to the possibility of, you know, us working, you know, our entire life. It's going to make it harder for everyone to compete in that realm. You have many individuals that are coming out of college without any experience, and they're trying to compete with those that, you know, have been in jobs for 25 years that have a ton of experience, and they're suffering the same, you know, dire, you know, consequence. It's just, it's a matter of, I always say this, and this is something that I personally do, and I tell this to my wife and to my kids, education is always key. The more education you can get, the more relevant you stay, and that's what I truly believe. Whether it's in, you know, your current industry now, or if it's just, you know, educating yourself, learning a new hobby, what's going to become a new skill or something, just the more well-rounded you are, the more skill set that you have, the more education you have, present more opportunities out there for you.
We are talking with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshore Advisors. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshore. We're talking economic issues. The number, if you want to ask a question or you have a comment, 516-387-1944. Okay, Paul. Gas is up. Food is up. Houses are up. Wages are not to the point where people are saying, hey, you know, maybe I, you know, just kind of let them a little bit more unemployment. And we talked a little, you talked a little bit about that earlier. The thing that concerns me, though, with people deciding, I'm going to hold off before going back to work, is don't you make yourself a little less relevant in the workforce if you're not continuing to hone your skills? You know, even if it's not in your preferred line of work?
I believe so. It's a moral hazard, I think, that, you know, arises when we have that situation. And I know there is a debate out there, and it's really a partisan debate where, you know, many Democrats say that, you know, that it's not the case where people are choosing to stay home and choose their benefits, and many Republicans are taking the opposite tone. I am a registered Democrat, but I do look at the data, and I do realize that it may not be the case for everyone. But I have had individuals tell me and brag about how much stimulus money they got, how much back pay they got for unemployment and different things, and that they're just going to have people literally say this. They're just going to apply for one or two jobs that are, you know, paying them that are supposed to pay like $200,000 to $300,000 a year, knowing that they don't qualify for it, so they intentionally won't get a job and continue to collect the unemployment. Now, I want to believe that those are far and few in between, and that's just not the norm. But unfortunately, when you do have that situation that arises, and when that is a significant moral hazard that is creeping into our economy. And that alone is going to, you know, create situations where we're going to continue to see the supply and demand gap to employment. As we continue to see this gap, it will create some wage inflation. So there will be some increases in wages, you know, as it comes along out there. But you got to think about it, those increases in wages, it's going to cause those producers to increase it. If I'm running a restaurant and I'm struggling to find people to come in and wait tables and have to resort to paying people $20 an hour to come in and wait tables and paying someone $22 an hour to wash dishes and things of that nature, the only thing I can do for the sandwiches that I sell is charge more money, and that's going to create more inflation in our economy. We had our reading for inflation this last month come out today, and we show that we outpaced inflation expectations by 4 times in this most recent reading. It was an increase of 0.8 instead of 0.2. And it was very similar when you strip out energy and food, the increase in inflation was the same. So we're at a point right now, and I mentioned it before, we've had so much economic stimulus and so much cash that's been pumped into the economy that water has to be absorbed somehow. There has to be a sponge that sponges all of that excess liquidity up. And right now, what it's doing, it's not creating people are not taking the jobs, or the jobs are not being filled, I should say, where the people are not taking them are. Their skill set doesn't line up with those demands. So what's happening is you have a lot of people that are staying home, a lot of people that are still spending a lot of money, and it's, you know, really driving that inflation out there. We're seeing it in food prices, like you said. We're seeing it in gas prices. Some of the gas prices that have went up recently is due to the supply line interruption that we've seen with the cyber attack. But we've been seeing inflating energy costs over, you know, the last, I should say, year and change. If you look at that national average of gas price a year ago, it was roughly $1.84 for the national average. Right now, at the 98 cents for the national average. So that's a significant increase. And that is a significant increase at a time where airplanes, cruise ships, cars are still not operating at full capacity like they did pre-pandemic levels. So we've seen that amount of inflation with still many people in a virtual society. So imagine the amount of inflation that we're going to see and an amount of costs that are going to rise when we see even more normalcy, or when we get to a herd immunity vaccination level in this country. It's going to really, really paint a dark and damn situation for many people out there.
There's just so much to absorb right now. One of the things I thought about what you were saying earlier when we were talking, I don't necessarily like jumping around, but I don't like kind of leaving stuff kind of hanging because when I have questions. You talked about, when people entering the job market, about the, you know, following what the predicted, I guess, jobs or careers will be. How far in advance can you predict what those lucrative careers or much-needed careers will be? And are there, like, just basic factors to look at? Because I'm sure that there were some, let's say, career opportunities that changed when the pandemic hit. So can you focus on that a little bit?
Yeah, so whenever you have those black swan events, that lead to, you know, seismic recessions like the pandemic, the Great Recession, the financial crisis, and things of those natures, they do cause an immediate seismic shift. Are they really pronounced a extended shift that's been taking place already and causes it to come front and center immediately? Forecasting and predicting the jobs that will be, you know, the flavor, I should say, of the month coming forward is something that is really driven by technology. As we see technological advances and technology that, you know, increase over time, there's always support that surrounds that. We saw that, you know, in this country over, you know, the last few hundred years. We've seen it in the world over the last few hundred years with the, you know, the invention of the nursing industry itself. And that was, you know, born out of, you know, needing assistance during the battlefields and things of that nature. And then it continued to grow, and then now you have nursing. Then on top of that, there's other sub-industries as the technology of nursing continues to grow and technology of medicine continues to grow. And then there's other industries. Now, we're at a point where if we were probably able to go back and ask Florence Nightingale, who's known as mother of nursing, modern nursing, about telehealth, she would have never even imagined years ago what telehealth would be and how big of a role telehealth will play in our economy as of now. So I would say staying key to what technology is doing and where technology is moving always gives us a good insight and good, you know, foresight as to where we are going, you know, with our economy and where the labor market is shifting toward. Some of the things that are on the horizon right now, many people are talking about the cryptocurrency. And I don't like calling it a cryptocurrency because it's not a currency. You know, when it's not widely accepted and widely used, it's not a currency. Most of them are commodities still to me at this point. So when those cryptos are out there, but I don't see them ever going away. Now, that's a whole other debate about whether they're good or bad and, you know, if they're good investment, bad investment. But I don't see those cryptos disappearing, and I see them becoming more and more widely acceptable. So what technology will be advancing around that? Will we get to a place where, you know, we no longer, you know, the jobs that are running, you know, the U.S. Mint, that are the Department of Treasury, that are printing dollars, will all those jobs become obsolete one day when everything is just ran off of an IP address and all the money in the world is just in air, in the thin air? Will there, you know, be a lack of fiat money? So trends, it's really how you're able to forecast, you know, those next jobs that are needed. To a certain degree, we're always going to have a demand for certain industries, such as the healthcare industry, such as, you know, the food service industry, those food producers, I should say. Because we're going to always need farmers. We're going to always need those things. But those new industries that come around are always bred out of new technology.
We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshore Advisors. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. By the way, today is National Nutty Fudge Day. If you have any recipes, share them with me on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. I've never made fudge, but I'd like to try. I'd like to get a good recipe. So if you have one, share it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page with me. The number, if you have questions for Paul or you have a comment, 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Jim Garris, and I think I found a way to help you understand what is Chill Out Jazz.
Some of y'all may be confused because of the style we choose. We make jazz and R&B. We don't categorize. We just make what sound good with it.
Is it jazz?
It is what it is.
Is it R&B?
Tune in every Wednesday night at 10 on K-Ham Radio.
This is Douglas Dobbs.
owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us on this hump day. We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshore Advisors talking a little economic news and issues. The number is 516-387-1944 if you have questions or comments. And I want to, I don't know where to begin now, but one thing I do want to address, and then I'll let you kind of take it if there's something that we've missed, because I know I've asked you a lot of questions on very specific things. Is the cruise industry going to cruise away from Florida? That's my next question. And what kind of impact is that going to have if it does?
That's a very, very good question. I was interested to see surprised to see the recent cruise lines make the statement that they did last week about potentially leaving Florida based on not being able to set sail. I don't foresee cruises ever leaving Florida. Florida has become that destination, that hot spot. There are so many, even though, you know, the cruise industry has a lot of people from all over the country, all over the world that come to Florida to take cruises. Many people in Florida, Florida residents, Florida's being the retirement state, many of us take cruises on a regular basis, and we're the ones that are filling up the ship. So I think there's a lot of posturing that is going on right now. I don't feel that there's a ton of substance, a ton of meat to it. Currently across the landscape, there are some people that want to take cruises, but then there still is a lot of fear out there as to whether when is the right time to get on a cruise or not. I know it's kind of starting to fall into the background because we don't see it on the news anymore about the number of new cases, the number of deaths that are taking place every day, but we do still have people dying of COVID-19 on a daily basis. We do still have people contracting COVID-19 on a daily basis. If it were the case where any cruise sets sail and goes out and does have a positive case, the response would have to be very similar to the way it was back at the onset of the pandemic, where we would be ships quarantined for 14 days offshore. Now, if just one scenario like that were to happen, I think that it would be, you know, very detrimental, you know, to the cruise industry. So I understand people want to get out there in the water. I understand that cruise ships and those companies want to get out there because they need to make money. But I think we're still at a point where we're too vulnerable from a healthcare standpoint to really, you know, pressure the cruise industry to return at this point. And thus, I think, be hard for cruises, you know, to justify setting sail from Texas, Alabama, Georgia, from New York, you know, all the other places, California, all the other ports that we have around the country. It would be really hard to justify, you know, moving just for that particular reason, especially.
I don't know. I kind of disagree a little bit because, number one, it's my business. And for you to tell me that I have to jeopardize my business by letting unhealthy people come and go in my business, and especially in such close quarters. And we know how uninhibited people are when they get on these cruises. They eat too much, they drink too much, they engage in undisciplined behavior in a lot of cases. I've just been a very long time since I've been on a cruise, and I love the cruise industry, but I live in Orlando. There are cruises that go out of Port Canaveral, Tampa, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. I would have to drive either way.
to get to one of these places to board a cruise ship. I wouldn't have a problem driving to somewhere in South Georgia, if there was a port there, to board a cruise ship. You know, our state is a very much a commuter state. We don't have a lot of mass transit. So, you know, driving here and there is not a big deal for most of us. And, you know, so going to Georgia a few hours away would be like going to Fort Lauderdale or Miami for me. You know, so I look at it that way. Just to be healthy, just to make sure that that cruise line is making sure that their passengers and their crew are healthy, I have no issue with that. You know, so that's just my opinion. That's my perspective. And I think if Florida does allow the industry to go because of the vaccine, you know, people, they want to have certain restrictions regards to having vaccinated people on their cruise lines. I think that's a terrible mistake, and that's my opinion. But, I'm behind the cruise lines with this.
That's interesting. I would just be curious to, you know, what any setbacks that were there be if there were any positive cases or there were any cruises out there that – you know, had positive cases or had to quarantine or had to report it back to the port, with the CDC then step in and then the federal government step in and say, you know, we're still shutting down everything and with the state specific at that point. I would hate to see the cruise industry leave Florida too. I mean, that's a big background of our economy. That's a lot of revenue that we generate from the cruises. Not directly just the cruise themselves, but, you know, hotels for people staying here, transportation industry, local transportation and national transportation benefits from that. So it would be costly to see it happen. And I think that, you know, we're in a place and time where we're so embedded. People are so accustomed to, you know, taking a cruise in Florida, being kind of synoptic term, that I think it would not be as advantageous for many people to leave, many cruise ships to leave and let's say go to, you know, Myrtle Beach or Savannah, Georgia. And the reason I say that too is because, you know, my immediate family is the only family that I have here in Florida. Everyone else is in Arkansas, Cincinnati, Chicago, Detroit. Whenever they take a cruise, they always have a day or two extra. And they come to the exciting part for them is they're taking a cruise, but they're also staying in Florida. They're going to Disney for that extra day, or they're going to this for extra
right.
day. So there's a one-two combo that's there for it. So I just don't know. I know for me, you know, like you said, we have to drive no matter what, whether it's to get to Fort Lauderdale. So what's the difference between driving to Fort Lauderdale from Orlando or driving to Georgia? Really not a difference at all. But for those individuals
right.
that travel from Detroit and Cincinnati and different places like that, would that destination spot sound advantageous for them to go to Savannah, Georgia versus Orlando, Florida to catch a cruise?
And I would
hate
for Florida.
But that's a very interesting concept.
I would hate for Florida to lose the business. I really would hate to see that. But for me, my health is more important. And I think while they're making these decisions and these considerations, they need to ask the people, like you said, at the beginning of the pandemic, that got stuck on these cruise ships and weren't allowed to dock, and people were getting sick. And staying sick and having to be rushed immediately to hospitals and stuff, I think they need to talk to some of those people and ask them what they think before they make these decisions.
I'm all for the health causes of it too, and I possibly need to do some more research on the particular stances and understand what the concerns are, you know, about the cruise ship, because is it more so that they want to require fully vaccinated people only on the cruises, and Florida wants to move forward without that? If that's the case, then I completely understand, you know, that transition as leaving of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. So what give us some, I guess, a little bit more of insight in terms of what you foresee happening with our economy over the next month.
So over the next month, I foresee us having, you know, somewhat similar and not exciting economic gains when it comes to the employment industry. I don't really see major moves happening in employment. I'm really curious to see what will take place in those four states that I mentioned earlier, and those are Arkansas, Georgia, South Carolina, and I believe there was one other state in there, Mississippi. Since they are pulling back on those federal unemployment benefits, to see if that does, you know, add to, you know, people going out and accepting those jobs, or will it revert back to still being a horrible situation now where you have many people that can't really afford their bills and afford to buy groceries and things of that nature. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out in the data over the next month or two. Additionally, I think we're going to see continued increases, continued inflation in our economy. We're getting to the season where we typically have, you know, a driving season. People are entering the summer, typically taking vacations. Things are reopening across the country, so people are starting to travel a little bit more for leisure. So I anticipate that we'll see north of $75 or so on food oil, which would translate to potentially seeing prices in that $3 range and above that $3 range. That's going to essentially play as a de facto tax on our economy when gas prices get to that level and gas prices get exorbitantly high, especially when we have. So there's a lot to be seen with that, and there's a lot to be seen over the next month of how the Federal Reserve is going to respond to rising inflation. Will they start to increase interest rates? Will there be any, you know, open market activity to try to slow down the economy to prevent us from getting too hot in the inflation tank? So those are all things that I'm looking out for over the next 30 days, and I'm talking with my investors about how to prepare for those things.
Paul, thank you so much for being with us today. we just never seem to have enough time. There's always a lot of stuff going on these days, but hopefully, we're going to talk a little bit, I know, next month about some home ownership stuff, too. It's National Home Ownership Month next month, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, too. But anyway, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Make sure if you have any questions, I am posting information about Paul on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. Make sure you contact him if you have any additional questions. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You too. Thank you all for listening. By the way, tomorrow, I know I mentioned Fudge, Nutty Fudge Day. Tomorrow's National Apple Pie Day. Send your recipes. Share them with everybody. And what's your key ingredient in your favorite apple pie? Let us know. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember all real power comes from God. Take care. Be well.
Give up the high grade. 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 out the highest grade.